This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. Of course, it is Wednesday, the 15th of November, 2017. It is noon, meaning it's time for Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Majida Hashim,
Arvind Yuvraj.
We have stories for you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. So, you know, if you're enjoying your lunch, sit down, have a bit of a listen. If you're driving around, be safe.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have some news about electric cars a little bit later on. We have stories about smart cities. We have stories about flying cars. We have stories about trackable pills.
Mm-hmm.
And something called the pop socket, which we'll
yep.
be starting off with in a minute.
Yep.
This is one of those stories that when we first read the headline, we thought, how on earth are we going to say that on air? And we realized that we can't do it, can we, really?
No, we can't.
So
since now you've alluded
yeah.
to it.
it's a very naughty headline. But, you know, let's just get on with it. Because this gadget thing, this accessory,
yeah.
is becoming quite popular right now.
Yeah, I don't think you can even call it a gadget. It's like, I think everyone has seen it, but they don't know what it's called. It's like a button.
Yes.
A button that extracts, that you stick to the back of your phone. So you've seen people holding it. You sort of see it in between their fingers.
Right.
It keeps the phone from dropping. It lets you have like a better grip on your phone. I think it's easier for you to use your speakers and for you to type and all the kinds of things.
It looks like a flat doorknob.
It yeah. looks like a flat doorknob. Yeah,
right.
yeah, yeah. And I think you can sort of fold it so that you can put it in your pocket. And when you take it out, it just like springs out.
Yep,
just like that. So, so and then it has like designs. I think Jeff had one, and it had like a stormtrooper.
Of course.
So you can have like a bunch of any kind of design that you want. And then we've seen some sold here like in like flea markets, and you can get it on Lazada and stuff.
Mm.
But the idea for this actually came from a company called PopSocket.
Okay.
And now... So it has like an official name. I think they started in 2014 or something like that. And the reason why I'm
going to say, why are we talking about this?
Yeah, because the way it has expanded and how popular it has become, the pop in pop socket could literally stand for popular.
Right.
That's how famous it is. And it has sold 30 million units in 2017.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, it's the fourth highest selling gadget on Amazon. When you go to like smartphone accessories, this is a number four. And it's not even anything to do with the electronics. It's not even an electrical thing. It doesn't do anything. It's not like a, selfie stick. It's just a very...
Oh, those things were so annoying.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just a simple handle thing that you stick on the back of your phone. But the reason it picked up so much in popularity is because celebrities started picking it up and they started using it. And I think it's because they could accessorize. So they started putting their own logos on it and they started designing it according to whatever they wanted to have. And then they started to take selfies with it. They started to Snapchat with it. There's a bunch of people that did it. So Gigi Hadid, I had no idea who she was. She was one of the first celebrities to have the pop socket. So,
I love the way you come out and say one of the world's biggest supermodels. You had no idea who she was.
I honestly didn't know.
Right. Okay.
I honestly didn't know. This is the first time I'm seeing like any shot of her. So she had the pop socket, and once she did it, it went viral like this thing. So Jared Leto snapped a mirror selfie of himself using the pop socket because of course he did.
Mm-hmm.
The Dodgers, the team, they unofficially endorsed it. Michael Phelps took a photo of his wife and his newborn with it. Emma Roberts had a Snapchat thing with it. So once people started to use it that much, it started to grow and expand, and within the last 3 years, over the last year at least, they've sold like 30 million units.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's insane. And I think you can get cheaper ones on Lazada. I think people have started to copy it. There are a lot of companies making pop sockets that
I saw one
yeah.
today for 2 ringgit 20 cents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they aren't actually pop sockets anymore. It's just like copycat items that you
right.
can buy. I think it's about 50 bucks in on Lazada or something.
For the official ones?
For the official ones, it's about 50. So the other thing is they have production facilities in China, Korea, Mexico, and Seattle. Next year, they're going to roll out car vent mounts and pop sockets that double as wallet holders. Yeah, so when you're taking out your wallet from your
what?
Pocket, yeah, I don't know how many people drop their wallets on a daily basis. But so that you don't, you know, the chance is never there. So you have a pop socket to hold your wallet. You also have a pop socket on your aircon vent, I think, so you can have your, it doubles as a car holder. Because now, the one I use in my car is like the windshield mount.
Right.
So yep. that holds my phone. I guess with something this simple, you can just like pop it into your aircon vent.
See, you're even using the right terminology.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pop it into the aircon.
They've got you already, Arvind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I say it's such an it's a good name also. You call it a pop socket. Yeah. You don't have to call it like weird phone handle or something after this. The company will also open offices in Finland and Singapore next month. So I think with the Singapore office, I don't know if Malaysians can hope to get it for less than $50, because I'm not paying $50 for a pop socket or whatever it's called. But if it's cheaper, like maybe 15 maybe, then yeah, maybe I'd pick one up if I could. If it was beneficial,
I mean, I'm going to, I said to you earlier on just before we came on air, I'm actually going to go and have a look for one just down the road at the local phone shop.
Yeah.
Just to kind of gauge how much they are and how popular they are, because up until now, we've seen a lot of the rings that fit onto the back of the phone, right? And a lot of people have been using them for a while. And myself, I've got one of those phone cases that has like a pop-out little stand, which is really irritating because it will not lay flat. But then again, when you're putting a pop socket on the back, that's not going to lay flat either, is it?
No, it's not flat, but it's almost flat-ish.
I think it's
I mean, it has like something that's jutting out of the back of your phone, but I think if people like holding it, it's something to accessorize the phone with. I think if they don't mind holding it, then they're not going to mind it being in their pockets. But can you guess what the guy who invented this is? His name is David Barnett. He made the pop socket. Can you guess why he invented it in the first place?
No.
He wanted something to hold his earphones with.
The cable. To wrap his cable around.
Yeah. So he is a former philosophy professor. Uh-oh. And in 2011, he got so annoyed with the headphone, the wires getting tangled in his pocket, he wanted something to help him roll it on. So he wanted something to hold the cables, and he wanted it to be attached to his phone. So what he did was he had a couple of buttons and some crazy glue, and then he made the first pop socket.
Wow.
And after that, he knew that he was onto something. He designed it for 3 years, and then he officially released the pop socket. And now pop socket has about 100+ person office somewhere in Arizona, I think.
And they're on track to sell 30 million units.
30 million, probably 5 to 10 million more next year, so about 40 million next year.
That's a serious amount of money. But as we know, with accessories like this, they tend to be kind of easy come, easy go. Like you say, with the selfie stick, those were like a health hazard. Those things were.
Oh yeah,
you know? And everybody had them for a little while, you know. And you fell into two camps, didn't you? Those who had one and those who hated those people that had them, you know.
yeah. But I think he knows that it's gonna fade out soon. That's why he's doing the aircon vents, and he's also doing the wallet holder thing.
But also very smart to push them onto celebrities as well, because who takes more selfies than celebrities right now?
Yeah, because if you go to popsocket.com, he has like collaborations with, I forgot her name. I've also forgotten her name.
Yeah. Bella Thorne. Yes.
Yeah, okay. So she had a collaboration, so she's pushing it out. They have like spokespeople and stuff for these tiny little buttons.
That's insane.
Super smart.
All right, on to the next story then. We're speaking of upping the game a little bit. London, they are installing electric car charging stations inside lampposts. For street charging. I think we mentioned something briefly about this not too long ago. But as we know, electric vehicles face a challenge for urban adoption because it's difficult to charge your car when you're just parking on a normal city street. So London are trying to address this problem by expanding a program to install EV charging stations inside street lampposts. Some of the Nordic countries already have an advantage since they already had the street infrastructure to plug into a block heater during the winter. I did not know that. They're able to leverage the same hardware to enable street charging for electric vehicles. Not the case for places with less harsh conditions, but a few companies are now offering solutions to solve this issue. Tesla unveiled a new urban supercharger with a slower dedicated charge rate specifically for city dwellers. On the other hand, Kensington and Chelsea Council in London have contracted the independent energy technology company OVO and Berlin-based technology company Ubitricity. That's a mouthful. To install charging stations using their lampposts. So here's a quote from one of the councillors who says, there's a growing demand for charging facilities and a growing number of electric vehicles in Kensington and Chelsea, because they're the posh areas of London. Most residents do not have access to off-street parking to charge an electric vehicle. Retrofitting street lamps with charging technology allows drivers to conveniently charge their vehicles closer to home while helping to tackle air pollution in London. Lamppost charging is also more cost-effective and much less obtrusive, as the charging points require no additional street furniture. They're using Ubitricity's simple socket charging system, which has a max output of 4.6 kilowatts. OVO have written about the program in a press release that was released yesterday, and they've said simple sockets will be conveniently located next to pay and display parking bays and available for use 24 hours a day with a low tariff of 15 pence per kilowatt hour of electricity. Running an electric vehicle will be affordable as well as accessible. Mm-hmm. So 15 pence per kilowatt hour is fairly in line with electricity rates in that region. But to be fair, you need to buy a £7.99 per month subscription to get that price, and a $199 pound cable from Ubitricity. So that's the thing you have to purchase first. You can also choose to go without a subscription, but the cable will cost you £100 more, and the electricity will then be 19 pence per kilowatt hour. So that's not cheap. But we've seen a lot worse in the UK and other places, and they're starting the installation of the new charge points this month and aim to be done with about 50 by the end of January. So they've thought it's been thought through. You know, how do we do this? What solutions do we need? What's the kind of logistics that we need to get this done? I don't know. I mean, I suppose if you've already invested in an electric car and you are committed to that lifestyle, you know, spending an extra £200 on a cable that allows you to pretty much charge your car if you're parked in the right place, I think that's a decent investment, you know? Yeah. I don't think I'd mind paying that.
No, but you know what's going to happen? Some genius is going to try to make his own cables, and that's when accidents are going to start happening.
That's very true. That's very true.
You shot one lamp and everything else goes
off the grid. You can pick up these things. Like, you'll be able to pick them up for like $10 on Lazada and stuff, and a bunch of accidents are going to happen.
So positive today. No, so positive, but accurate. Yes.
But you know someone's going to try to replicate it. I mean, I hope they don't. And the company, it looks like they're making their money off the cables, not the charging and stuff.
Sure.
So that's where the revenue comes from and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's quite cool. It's prepaid. They're doing like a prepaid model kind of thing and all. Yeah,
I like it. Mm. Majini, you've been very quiet so far. What's wrong with you today?
I'm still getting over the pop socket. Having said that, this story is interesting to me because I'm wondering right now, if I'm driving an electric car and it's fully charged and I'm parking it somewhere in London, I don't know whether, do I actually really need to charge my car? Would that be enough charge to get me home?
But then, maybe not, but then you also have that thing is, if you didn't charge your car fully the night before and you just got enough to get into town, maybe you might need an extra hour's worth of charge. You can just think, you know what, I'll just pop it in.
Yeah.
See, they've got me saying the word.
Is that it's going to be the word?
It's like plugging in your handphone, I guess. You just, when you're not using it, just leave it to
right, into the socket.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. I'm popping and socketing. Right, it's time to take a break. Some music coming up. It is Jet with Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Majida Hashim,
Arvind Yuvaraj.
So yesterday we gave you a story about how Mr. Bill Gates, the friendly and affable Mr. Bill Gates, richest man in the world, had decided yesterday that for some reason, he decided to give away $100 million to help with Alzheimer's research. Mm-hmm. And we were all sat around here going, yeah, that's great. He's doing really well. Now we found out he's wanting to give away more of his money.
More of his money, yeah.
Who is he giving it to this time?
I think he's just giving it to himself because he wants to he wants to build a new smart city.
Right.
And he's doing it through his investment company. So he wants to build a new smart city with a population of about 200,000 people, or as it's known in Malaysia, Mid Valley on a Saturday. So this futuristic city, he says, will be built in Arizona, and it will be called Belmont. And if you're wondering where the name Belmont comes from, it's actually after Belmont Partners, which is a company, is a firm run by Microsoft itself.
His investment company, right?
Yeah, investment company. So it's investing $80 million in the project, which, I don't know, for a smart city sounds like a little.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a huge amount of money, right?
I don't know how you can build a city with 80 million, but I guess, you know, it's less wastage and stuff. It's smart building at the end of the day, you know? He says that it will be forward-thinking and it will have cutting-edge technologies at the core. He has purchased 24,800 acres of land and it will be used for schools, housing, offices, and commercial and retail space. And it will have 80,000 residential units to house 200,000 people.
Okay.
Yeah. There's not much about what the smart city will have because it's kind of vague. It uses words like forward thinking. It says communication and infrastructure spine.
Does it say disrupt in there anywhere?
No. He didn't use that buzzword. Okay, but then he uses stuff like embraces cutting edge technology designed around high speed digital networks, data centers, new manufacturing technologies and distribution models, autonomous vehicles and autonomous logistics hubs.
So he's building his own utopia in the middle of Arizona.
Yeah.
I don't know. He probably found out Google were building their own thing up in Toronto. And then went, you know what? I want one of those too.
Yeah.
This sounds kind of a bit like that. You know?
Yeah, because the most interesting thing in his description is saying a flexible infrastructure model. And I think that's what Google is doing because they're building Quayside in Toronto.
Yeah.
And they are like kind of specific on what they want to do. So I think this goes back to when we were talking about not smart cities. We use the word flexible cities?
Yeah.
No.
Not reactive cities, wasn't it?
Yeah, reactive cities.
Right.
So they were very specific in what they want to do. So they said that Google will attempt to mitigate the weather to encourage people to spend more time outside. So they're actually going to control.
Yeah, you're going to control the
climate.
The weather.
Yeah. In their own smart in this Quayside city that they're going to build, the world's first neighborhood built from the internet up, and Google hopes to turn it into a blueprint for 21st century urban neighborhood.
All right, I had a really interesting chat with Matt Armitage about this a couple of weeks ago, and we were saying, oh, you know, it sounds wonderful, this wonderful utopia and whatever. But then when you really, really break it down and you start talking about it, he was talking about how, well, you know, these towns could have their own security firms. They would stop you going in, you know, and they could stop you going out. They can literally close the city down and you can't do anything about it because you've become a private resident of that city.
Yeah.
Therefore, you may also be liable to their own private laws and their own private rules. And you might have to obey the money that they use. It could be, you know, a Google coin or a Microsoft coin, a Belmont coin or whatever. So the idea is great, but then you've got to look at that bigger picture of whether or not how much manipulation they could do were you to live in that city, and what do you have to do to be a member of that city?
Yeah.
You know, that's what kind of. And I hadn't thought of that until he mentioned it, and I was like, oh actually, yeah.
Yeah, there's like scary. Full control. You know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and how much are you going to pay for the weather to be like in on a you know, a certain way and a certain time,
right.
Like a certain season?
Right.
Like if you want it to snow during Christmas, like how much tax goes into, you know, getting it to snow during Christmas and stuff?
Yeah.
And it also says that it will have flexible buildings that can be completely reconfigured at speed. So that's, you know, reactive cities at its best, right?
Yeah.
So they want to just like remodify buildings and stuff according to what they want and what the people in the city want also.
I kind of like the idea though.
It is. I mean, I wouldn't mind living in a city like that. I mean, it's not like, I don't know, it's not like you have complete freedom already. So, you know.
Don't be a cynic. Come on.
I'm visualizing this giant 3D printed homes.
Right.
And then they're all retrofitted, all prefab pieces of buildings that just can be put together and all everything else fitted in. I'm imagining a city which has the whole, which has a chance to start all over again. So if you could start a city and build residences and schools and markets and things like that all over again, how can you use technology that we have today to make it as smart as possible?
Yeah.
So can you use better energy efficiency, better water efficiency, better waste management, which is recycled, and then it goes back into generating energy, for example, for that city? It could be a self-sustaining city, but it will need to exist in its own bubble.
Right.
It cannot attach yourself to the world that we have now, unless right now the pace that we are keeping up with technology is as fast as that. So if we're going to change the cities that we have now to make it smarter, that's going to be really, really expensive. This could actually be the cheaper way there.
Yeah. I remember in the UK there was a new city built. It's called Milton Keynes, and it was built sometime in the late 50s, early 60s. And I'd never been, you know, and I'd heard stories about this place, Milton Keynes, and I remember going to this city and pulling into a car park somewhere and thinking to myself, well, where is the center of this city? And I remember speaking to the security guard, you know, where's the center of Milton Keynes? You're stood right in it. There was no city center as such. It was just like this kind of satellite town just outside of London. And that idea of, you know, having all of these little pockets built around a specific area rather than having a central hub, for me was a bit weird. you know. But something like this and what they're doing seems to be that there is going to be a brain, if you like, in the center of the city, because there's going to have to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's just, you know, like even now we're paying money for facilities, for services, to live comfortably in the city or wherever you're living, right? It's just a matter of knowing where your money is going. And if it's going to someone like Google or someone who's providing you a smart city and they're doing it to have better schools or buildings that actually work for you instead of you working for the building, services that actually service in the first place instead of you needing to, you know, hunt them down all the time, then why not? I mean, money is money, you know, at the end of the day. It is going to be some form of... I think there was an example like this, and I don't know if I should... Have you been to Desa Park City?
I've never been.
Yeah.
But I know of it. Yeah.
Desa Park is gentrification at its best. It's how you kind of like isolate a hub and like a small township in the middle of Kepong, of all places. And if you just come outside the borders of Desa Park, it's messy, it's congested, the traffic is bad. But if you just drive, it doesn't even have a border. If you just pass like a traffic light and you come through Desa Park, everything is fully arranged. It looks like Putrajaya. It's like, you know, the roads are like nicely done up and the landscaping is perfect. So it kind of makes you like wonder like how much, you know, if someone can put that much effort into something like this and then turn like suburban areas into like well-organized bubbles that work, you know, that work by themselves, then, you know, why not? It seems like a good idea.
It's the idea of centralization and decentralization. A lot of our cities now are decentralized. Somebody else is taking care of waste. Somebody else is taking care of landscaping. Someone else is taking care of energy distribution. Someone's taking care of who picks up the garbage in front of your house. But this idea of centralization, that somebody is, that one unit is going to be in charge of all, and I'm going to make sure that it's as efficient as possible, because you don't have to deal with so many entities, you can actually make it as lean as it is, because you don't have all those layers to get through from one to another.
Right. Well, that's kind of what a council should do, though, right? You know, a centralized council should send out cleaners and they should send out this. But we know that the councils, not just here, but everywhere, you know, are inefficient machines.
Mm. Yeah, but if you give it to a developer, then they take care of it. I think Desa Park comes under like one developer.
That's because they make money from it, right?
Yeah, a lot. It's a lot. Desa Park, so yeah, a lot.
But you get what you pay for. You get the efficiency. So that I'm sure people don't mind paying if you know that you're going to be taken care of, and you know at the end of the day your welfare, and you're living in a place which is very comfortable, and you can bring up your family there.
Yeah.
All right, time for a short break then, folks. If you want to join the conversation, get us on Twitter or at BFM Radio, or of course on WhatsApp on 018-789-8899. Time for some music. It is a little bit of Arcade Fire. Wake up here on BFM 89.9.
Bring forth money. BFM 89.9.
No flipping here today. It is Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
A lot of popping.
There's a lot of popping here. Will you stop? My name is Rich Bradbury. That man over there is Arvind Yuvaraj with
Majida Hashim.
We've had a whole bunch of stories so far. We started off with, of course, the pop socket, which is this year's need accessory. I'm sure there's going to be a whole bunch of stocking stuffers at Christmas. I could have used a better phrase. And then, of course, we spoke about how London are converting some of their lampposts into charging posts for electric vehicles. Then, of course, we spoke a little bit about Bill Gates' upcoming smart city. What do you want to call it?
Belmont.
Yes. Yeah. Now, we speak about these kind of vehicles quite a lot. We've spoken about, you know, electric vehicles and flying vehicles and one thing or another. And me and Arvin, I think it was last... In fact, you were here.
Just earlier this week.
We were talking about how none of this is actually happening yet. Why are we not hearing about flying cars, really? It looks like somebody listened to us and went, hang on a minute. Who is it?
Yeah, so Zhejiang Geely, a Chinese holding company which controls Volvo, Link & Co, Geely and the Lotus brands, announced this week that they plan to that they have actually acquired American flying car startup Telefugia.
Weren't they also in the Proton thing? Earlier this year?
Yeah.
I think they were.
Now they have they own a company that makes flying cars.
Right. Mm.
So Telefugia, which is based in Boston, Massachusetts, became one of the first firms in flying car space when it was founded in 2006 by a group of engineers from MIT. Geely says that they're investing in Telefugia to make flying cars a reality. It's also hiring some really big guns. Former managing director of Bell Helicopter, Chris Yaron, has been appointed CEO of Telefugia, and in anticipation of the deal, Telefugia has tripled the size of its engineering team over the past quarter.
Wow.
The Telefuja founder, Carl Dietrich, is staying in the company as chief technology officer, so no one has lost their job. Instead, they have tripled the number of people, and they're all working towards building the flying car. The company's first product, which is the Transition, is promised to be in the market by 2019. It features a two-seat cabin in a foldable wing. It's not the sexiest looking car, but it is the prototype.
It's pretty cute.
It's flying. It is a flying car.
It's like the Cantula flying car.
It is very
cute.
Yeah.
What it is right now.
The wings enables the car to fit in a standard car lane. It is a car that you fold the wings, it does fit in a standard garage. You can close the garage door and everything. And it opens and closes its wings under a minute. It delivers a 400-mile flying range at a top speed of 100 miles per hour. It requires a runway, though, so it's not one of those vertical landing and takeoff one. But they are working on the Transition TFX, which is a vertical takeoff and landing vehicle for better performance, and that vehicle is going to be launched in 2023. This is it. Telefuja is already accepting $10,000 reservations for the Transition, so you can actually go there and put a down payment on this flying car.
But this is not Kickstarter.
It's not, but people are already putting down payment and saying, and you can put down payment to say that I want one of these when it comes out. $10,000 for a reservation. They expect the final price to be somewhere within the range of $280,000.
Is this the first time, to my knowledge, where we've spoken about a car manufacturer actually getting involved with flying vehicles?
No, we have spoken about,
we've spoken about tech companies getting involved, but have we actually spoken about a car manufacturer getting involved?
The Toyota Skunk team is working on a flying car. Mercedes-Benz is partnered up with Volocopter, which is coming out with a flying car. I mean, Uber's working with NASA, and they are going and working on Uber Air. So there are car companies which are partnering up with companies that do develop aircraft technology and things that fly to create flying vehicles. And so they are not the first one, but it is a race.
I mean, I think the reason that I feel a little bit more confident perhaps with this company, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Geely as it is, but you know, that notwithstanding, the very fact that they have the guy from Bell Helicopters is reassuring. The fact that they've tripled their workforce in the last quarter, Geely's involved, they're going to be spending a heck of a lot of money on this. This is something that is most likely to take off. I remember watching the Terrafugia not too long ago on YouTube, and seeing the first few test flights of it and thinking that thing looks a little bit wonky. But as they've constantly uploaded their videos recently, and watching it now, it's almost believable.
It is flying. It is not just a bunch of people working on it. It is a very bunch of very smart people. These are MIT engineers, and now they've got money to spend on developing it. So smart people with a lot of money building flying cars. I really think it's going to take off.
She's stolen my line.
I think it's nice because the previous ones, I think we've seen like videos, like YouTube videos, and they are not exactly flying cars. I mean, you cannot have like a mini helicopter and then call it like a flying car. And those things are mini helicopters. They have like wheels, and then when they take off, they have like giant propellers, and like there's no way anyone can use this like in a practical scenario. You can't park it in your house because it's so huge. But this one looks like an actual car. It's a bit long at the back. It has all these like mechanical attachments and stuff. But it looks like a car that I could see being advertised like on a billboard, being sold by like Volvo or like another company, like adapting its technology and stuff.
Right.
And something that you could park in your house.
So this the car itself is roadworthy. It is a legally compliant vehicle that you can, if you don't want to fly, you can use it to drive around with. It does have, it is a two-seater. The thing about Transition now is that it requires a runway. It is not a eVTOL. It needs a stow, a short takeoff and landing. So you need to get yourself to a airport-ish place or somewhere where you can actually have maybe 5 kilometers to take off. You can't do that over on the highway.
That thing would never work here in KL. Do you ever have 5 kilometers of straight empty road apart from at 2 o'clock in the morning?
No. If you go to Federal, not even at 2 o'clock
and
in the morning,
then,
you can go like maybe 20 steps before the next car
or the next limpet appears on middle of nowhere.
The world's biggest car park, right here in KL. Right, time for a short break. We've got some music coming up from the Stone Temple Pilots with "Tripping on a Hole in a Paper Heart." When we come back, a story about how the FDA has approved the first digital pill. More about that when we come back. You are listening to Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Final story of the day, something I picked up. First it was on the BBC and then it was somewhere else. How the FDA has approved the first digital pill. So it tracks if patients have taken their medication. So it's called Abilify MySight. It's fitted with a tiny ingestible sensor that communicates with a patch worn by the patient. We've done stories very similar to this, right? The patch then transmits medication data to a smartphone app, which the patient can voluntarily upload to a database for their doctor and other authorized persons to see. So it's a drug that treats, Abilify is a drug that treats schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and is an add-on treatment for depression. So it features this sensor, which is the size of a grain of sand, and it's made of silicon, copper, and magnesium. An electrical signal is activated when the sensor comes into contact with stomach acid. The sensor then passes through the body naturally. So a patch the patient wears on their left rib cage receives the signal several minutes after the pill is ingested. The patch then sends data like the time the pill was taken and the dosage to a smartphone app over Bluetooth. It records activity levels, sleeping patterns, steps taken, activity and heart rate, and must be replaced every 7 days. And the patient's doctor and up to 4 other chosen people by the patient, including family members, can access this information, and they can revoke access at any time. It comes after years of research and is a venture between Japanese pharmaceutical company Atsuka and digital medicine services Proteus Digital Health, which makes this sensor. The medicine so far in the U.S. healthcare sector costs over $200 billion in 2012. This is kind of a way of, I don't know, people who have those kind of disorders are the kind of people that generally don't and are not honest with their physicians, right? Mm-hmm. If you have something like this and you're willing to wear a little patch just for a little bit, the doctor can be 100% accurate as to what your levels are, what your medication is like, without having to draw blood or anything like that. The data is all there. I like the idea of non-invasive kind of techniques using for people like this. Majida, what do you think?
I think that... it's not something new. We've had people swallow pills before. To track what's happening inside the stomach. I like the idea that it is something that I don't have to talk about. If I'm going through periods of feeling very down, depression or bipolar and things like that, sometimes I really don't feel like talking, or I don't know how to express how I feel, or I don't understand what I'm feeling altogether. And if something else can communicate for me how I feel inside, what's interesting, what I would wonder about this is that because these are things that's going on inside my head, so how does something that is in my stomach measure that?
The stomach acid is just the first thing that activates the sensor. Yeah. So that's the time when it switches on as you like. But then it will monitor stuff like your blood levels and the chemicals and the hormones within your brain. Well, not within just your brain, but
the body as a whole.
The body as a whole.
So I'm very interested to see how that works, and the sensor that will sit inside my stomach measures how the rest of the chemical balance in my whole body reacts.
Yeah.
So that one is interesting to me, that the central of everything else is in the stomach. Mm.
Yeah, and it's also. I like that they announced this, but then there's also that part in it that is kind of like hidden, which is you can track people's depression and mental illness by looking at the blood and then people's sugar levels, hormone levels and stuff using this kind of pill, which means that it's an actual physical thing.
Right.
Which we always,
we've discussed
this,
right?
We always argue about the same thing, that these kind of sicknesses are actual physical anomalies in the body and stuff. So if they can track and then it can show you that, yeah, look, this person has abnormal readings in their blood or their anything to do with their body, then it's easier to treat. And maybe you can even treat the symptoms before going to the root of the problem and then like getting rid of that or something. Or just helping the person cope with, you know, whatever it is they're going through. It'll be interesting to see if they have like a pill like this, where if you ingest it, it gives you readings for not just things like mental illness and depression or anxiety, but it gives you a full body reading of everything that you're going through.
Right.
Instead of going through, because, you know, medicine...
It's possible, right?
Yeah. It's expensive, no? When you go and get like an MRI and something, and not everyone can afford it.
Yeah.
But if they make this cheap and they get like readings sent to their smartphones, and then if they see something is off and then they go to their doctors, it's not in favor of the medical industry, but it, you know, it helps people at the end of the day, and that's what's important.
I mean, worldwide, as I just mentioned, $200 billion are wasted on medical treatment, unnecessary medical treatment. Something like this is a kind of, you know, this is actually what's happening and this is actually the treatment that you require.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to like guessing, you know, second guessing that what the symptoms could mean.
Yeah, or going through like a series of like 10 tests before you finally figure out like what's wrong with the with the person. And by the time, you don't know if the person's insurance even covers him or her anymore, you know?
Right,
so, you're just having like... And the magnesium and the stuff that's in it, it's not like we take medicines that don't have dangerous substances already. So
it's stuff that we already take anyway, you know,
in
one form or another. Right, we have to wrap up. It's come to the end of the show. Let's quickly run through the stories that we covered. I can't wait for Arvind to start off. Mm-hmm. We started off with...
We spoke about this socket. What's it called?
The pop.
The pop socket.
The pop socket,
yeah, so this pop socket, and it's this button that you have at the back of your phone, and it's being endorsed by a lot of celebrities, and they sold 30 million units in 2017.
Oh my word. We then moved on to how London are changing some of their lampposts to enable charging of electric vehicles within the city.
Then we spoke about how Bill Gates is investing $80 million to build a smart city called Belmont.
And then we spoke about Geely, which is a company that controls Volvo, Lotus, Geely and Link, and how they have acquired a flying car startup, Telefugia.
Then of course we just wrapped up with the trackable pill that will be available on the markets very shortly. Right, it's time for us to wrap up, but don't go anywhere, because coming after the 1 o'clock news, we have the Breakfast Grill replay, and it's with the Fonterra Group. They're one of the largest dairy exporters and processors in the world. Its presence in Malaysia is significant as Malaysians continue to increase their dairy consumption and demand for high quality dairy. As New Zealand's leading multinational company, the Breakfast Grill spoke to Jose Miguel, the managing director of Fonterra Malaysia, about the company's plans in the country, and shares with the Breakfast Grill some notable trends amongst its Malaysian consumers. That's all we have time for today. I'm Rich Bradbury on behalf of Majid Hashim and Arvind Yuvaraj. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place at noon here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.